following is a presentation of the Yale Law School. Welcome to the Faculty Book Review, an interview series highlighting the recently published works by faculty members of the Yale Law School. In this episode, we speak with William K. Townsend Professor of Law Ian Ayres, a lawyer, economist, and author of the new book, Super Crunchers, Why Thinking by Numbers is the New Way to Be Smart. In his new book, Professor Ayres takes a long and lively look at the evolving nature of decision-making. He explains how decisions once based on expertise and intuition are increasingly being made by individuals and organizations crunching massive amounts of data. Professor Ayres calls these data-driven decision-makers super crunchers and argues that their work affects society and individual lives in ways we don't even realize. This global decision-making revolution can appear in everything from a physician's diagnosis to the search results you receive from Google and Amazon to the policies your government creates. Professor Ayres will be interviewed by Editorial Director Caitlin Thomas of the Law School's Public Affairs Office.
Welcome, Professor Ayres. First, what inspired you to write Super Crunchers?
I've been doing empirical studies on everything from race discrimination in car sales to kidney transplantation and reckless sex, and I've just gotten fascinated with this growing trend of data-driven decision-making, and I wanted to write about it.
What exactly is a super cruncher, and how does super crunching affect our everyday lives?
A super cruncher is this new generation of statistician that is crunching monstrously large data sets in ways that are having impacts on decision-making with a speed and a scale that we've never seen before. Super crunching is impacting field after field, and it impacts our lives both as employees and as consumers and as citizens.
Super Crunchers describes how data mining is used by companies like Capital One to sell specific products. Is super crunching something that ultimately helps us or hurts us as consumers?
Well, Capital One uses both of the core tools of super crunching. They mine historical data, and secondly, they are massively proactive in running randomized tests to find out what works. And so when you call into Cap One, before the operator even picks up the phone, a list of products and services appears on the operator's a computer screen saying what products and services you're most likely to be interested in. And it helps the operator upsell you. Now, I have to say, I'm not a great fan of upselling, but I like it better if they upsell me on products that I'm actually interested in.
You write at length about evidence-based medicine and randomized trials and how these are a type of super crunching. Can you describe how super crunching has historically been used by physicians and, in contrast, by attorneys?
Sure. Well, the long tradition that in medicine is of going out and doing studies to find out what kind of treatments work and which ones don't work. But it's really taken hold really in just the last 15 years, where physicians have more and more often started to rely on evidence-based medicine, on basing their treatments on the best statistical studies that are out there. And one of the impacts of super crunching and of evidence-based medicine is it's a real shift of discretion. Increasingly, physicians don't have as much control over what their treatment decisions will be. Their patients are using Google and WebMD, and they are starting to demand that the physician show me the study. They want to know what the evidence suggests the best treatment is for stage 3 lung cancer, and not just based on the intuitions or personal experience of an individual physician. As a law professor, I'm actually struck at this huge contrast between physicians and lawyers. If you roll the historical tape back about 20 years, and think about a law firm, the intellectual and physical heart of every law firm 20 years ago was its law library. And if a client had a problem, about the first thing that a good lawyer would always do would be to hit the books. And in sharp contrast, we should be asking ourselves, where was the library in our doctor's office? Doctors didn't have libraries because they never did patient-specific research. And that's just a huge difference that's changed now in the last 15 years, in part because of the internet. Now every physician can have a library at her fingertips. Every examination room now, or many, have the effectively incredibly large libraries through the internet. And we're only just beginning. Evidence-based medicine has radically changed the way that treatment decisions are made. And in the next 5 to 10 years, physicians are going to lose even more discretion because evidence-based medicine is going to conscribe, restrict their discretion on diagnosis.
You describe how a Supreme Court study shows that statistical analysis can outpredict the experts. What does this say about the future of traditional expertise?
Well, the Supreme Court study is really a great example of a much larger set. Hundreds of studies have suggested that statistical algorithms do a better job of predicting than traditional experts. In the Supreme Court study, they took 83 legal experts, many of them who had clerked on the Supreme Court, and they asked them to predict the justices' votes to affirm or reverse for an entire term of the Supreme Court. And by the way, the experts only had to make predictions on cases in their field. If you're a bankruptcy expert, you only had to predict the votes on the bankruptcy cases. And against these experts, they pitted an incredibly crude statistical algorithm that didn't even take into account the issue in the case. Instead, it paid attention to whether the lower court opinion was liberal or conservative. That had to be coded by humans. And it paid attention to where the case came from. It's well known among attorneys that the Supreme Court hates California, or they often reverse the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. But at the end of the day, it turned out that this incredibly crude statistical algorithm did a better job of predicting the votes of the justices and of the court as a whole. So this, I think, the big lesson to learn from this study and from the dozens upon dozens of other studies in other fields is that simple statistical algorithms have a systematic advantage at making predictions over humans. And where we really get it wrong is the more complicated the prediction, the more we think that we have to defer to an expert. But it's actually the more complicated the prediction, it's the worst that experts do relative to statistical algorithms. Humans are pretty good at predicting simple things. If I shake up a Coke can and open it, any of us can predict what's going to happen. But if there is some process that has 5 or 10 or more underlying influences, that's where humans start doing a bad job. Lawyers know that the Supreme Court hates California, hates the Ninth Circuit. But when we start actually predicting individual cases, we just don't put enough weight on that simple impact. We fall in love with these subtle things that don't matter as much. And so we don't do nearly as good job of putting the right causal weights on underlying influence as even a very crude statistical prediction.
And can you tell me a little bit about how you chose the title Super Crunchers?
Sure. The title is itself a product of super crunching. I went into this project loving the title The End of Intuition, but I decided to run a randomized test using Google AdWords to find out which was more popular on the internet. And so I set up a Google AdWords campaign, which showed advertisements to people who were searching for terms like data mining. Half the people would see a Google ad that said the end of intuition, and half of them would see an ad that said Super Crunchers, and lo and behold, the Super Crunchers ad had a 63% higher click-through rate, and that was one of the reasons I chose it instead of my own intuitive choice.
Where else could randomized tests be used?
You know, virtually any place where a decision maker has the ability to randomly treat subjects differently. For example, it's striking to me, but with all the emphasis on number crunching that's happened in sports, there has never been a randomized control trial of sports strategy. And so, besides still doing a lot of number crunching on legal issues, I've just now started to make contact with coaches at the high school, college, and professional level to start doing some simple randomized control tests of what strategies work. For example, I recently contacted the head cheerleader at Duke basketball team, and a very simple test is to randomly assign different distractions for free throws, and you try different distractions at random for different opponents, and you can very quickly learn which distractions, crowd distractions, have the biggest impact on reducing their free throw rate. You could learn using a randomized trial whether playing zone defense works better than man-to-man. The Boston Red Sox could make use of their minor leagues to do randomized tests on what pitches were most effective to throw at the opponents.
On your website, you include a list of links to prediction tools that can predict everything from the future of Bordeaux to Justice Kennedy's next vote to a person's likelihood of developing an illness. How accurate are these prediction tools? Do you have any favorites?
Well, I don't make any representations on the accuracy of these. Some of the tools, though, have this wonderful advantage that they not only make a prediction, but the tool also simultaneously gives its own estimate of the precision. So you can, matter of fact, one of my favorites is an estimate of a pregnant woman's due date. So we've been, a lot of physicians today still tell pregnant women their due date based on a mystical formula developed by somebody about 100 years ago that thought that women's gestation was 10 lunar months. And that was just based on the thought that, well, nature must have chosen some round number. But instead, you could take the experience of thousands of women and correlate it with underlying factors. And it turns out that women who are giving birth the first time have a longer gestational period, that older women have a different gestational period than younger women, that actually African-American women have a different gestational period than Caucasian. And so if you come to the site and you plug in I think about a dozen variables, it will not only make a prediction of what your due date will be, but it will give you a range of dates that you can be 95% confident that the birth will occur within.
What do you hope that your audience ultimately takes away from reading Super Crunchers?
Super Crunching is impacting field after field, and you know, the best decision makers are going to not give up on their intuition, but they have to be willing to put their intuition to the test.
For more information about Professor Ian Ayers and his scholarship, visit www.law.yale.edu/faculty/IanAyers.htm or www.ianayers.com. More about Super Crunchers can be found at www.supercrunchers.com. Professor Ayers' writing can also be found on the Freakonomics blog at freakonomics.blogs.nytimes.com. This interview was conducted December 14th, 2007.